The Catholic Channel SiriusXM 129 presents Just Love with your host, Monsignor Kevin Sullivan, Executive Director of Catholic Charities of the Archdiocese of New York.
Hey, welcome to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. This is our weekly conversation about the church in the world. And we just say, do it. Just love God, just love your neighbor, just love yourself. And our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. Well, I'm getting lazy. I said to somebody in my office earlier this week, I'm taking off till Labor Day. And the person said, well, Memorial Day is... I said, no. Don't you get the point? I want to take off from Memorial Day to Labor Day. That's what I'm looking to do. So anyway, so as we're in our Memorial Day weekend, I think it's a good time for us, as always, to kind of reflect upon, the issues of war and peace. Remember with kind of gratitude those who have served in our armed services, and to kind of reflect a little bit about what we do to make our world more peaceful. And so I'm delighted a little bit later on in the show, we're going to have an old friend, and I do mean old friend, George Horton, who is here. And I asked George to come into the show. Some of our listeners remember him. He used to be co-host here of Just Love. And I asked him to come because we're actually around the time of the 50th anniversary of the war in Vietnam. And George has some reflections upon that time, his personal time. And we'll talk a little bit about, you know, our church's kind of attempt to make our world more peaceful by, you know, coming with some criteria for not using force unless we absolutely have to. So a little bit later on in the show, and I'm glad George is here in the studio with us. But I am not over yet the Met Gala. And since I'm not over the Met Gala, you're not going to be over the Met Gala. So today we're going to talk about the Met Gala, and particularly the gowns. And I am absolutely delighted. In a few minutes, we're going to be speaking with Renee Schume, who is the founder of the New Catholic Generation. And I was just so impressed by the YouTube clip that I saw her and a couple of her friends discussing the gowns at the Met Gala. I agreed with almost all of her perspective on it, not 100%, but I agreed with so much of it that I thought it'd be great to have a conversation about those gowns. And in the studio with us again is Fanny Gomez. And Tom, thanks for lining up our guests for this week. So, hey, Fanny, did you like the Met Gala?
I did. I liked the majority of the dresses.
Did you go?
I did. I didn't get an invite. It must have gotten lost in the mail or something.
No, I didn't go either. I'm annoyed. I'm annoyed at that. So, I mean, it's whatever. I often say, you know, I'm a Monsignor. I said, you know, they make me pay full freight on the subway. They make me wait in line at the Vatican Museum. Mm-hmm. I have to pay the regular things there. I don't think this thing is worth it. I mean, you know, I mean, there should be
Are you rethinking it?
Well, I mean, and the Pope doesn't want to make any more Monsignors.
Right.
So I'm thinking maybe I could barter it for something. You know, it might be that. But anyway, so let's go to our first guest, Renee Schume, who's the founder of the New Catholic Generation, Inc. Renee, thanks so much for joining us on Just Love.
Thank you, Monsignor. It's so great to be here. It's so awesome that you reached out.
Well,
Let me tell you, Renee,
you're of the New Catholic Generation. I'm of the old, decrepit Catholic Generation. So, you know, maybe we'll have an interesting conversation about that. Hey, before we get started in kind of being the critique of the gowns and the Met Gala, tell me a little bit about yourself and tell me a little bit about the New Catholic Generation.
Sure. Well, I grew up in Cleveland, which it was a pretty Catholic city for most of my life, and I think it still is.
You know, they don't have a bad baseball team. It's certainly well behind the New York Yankees, but I mean, you know, you got a respectable major league team there.
Thank you very much. I'm a huge Indians fan, so that means a lot.
Yeah, I got to tell you, our second guest, can you believe this? He is a Boston Red Sox fan.
Oh my God!
Really?
Yeah,
oh
you know, I mean, he's.
Oh my God!
If he ever gets into heaven, it's going to be after years and years in purgatory. You know, thank God is merciful. But anyway, so anyway, Renee, let me not interrupt. You grew up in Cleveland.
I grew up in Cleveland and in a very Catholic environment. Went to a lot of Catholic schools, but when I was about 16, I started a YouTube channel of my own, and I started trying to find other Catholic young people online. And eventually I did find some, and a bunch started their own channels. And I made a website called New Catholic Generation, where I just listed every young Catholic YouTuber worldwide. And this was in 2012. Now, when I went off to college at Franciscan University of Steubenville, it turned out that some of those YouTubers ended up going to this college as well. And we thought, hey, we should make like a collaborative channel and call it New Catholic Generation and kind of represent all those Catholic YouTubers and young Catholics out there. So that started in 2016.
Oh, that is great. But we got to get you out of Ohio. I mean, come on. I mean, Ohio is important. You guys elect presidents, but there's more to the world than Ohio. We got to get you out of Ohio someday. Are you still there?
No, I wouldn't mind a vacation or two.
All right. Well, you're always welcome in New York. Always welcome in New York. So anyway, so let's see, this Met Gala. So let me begin by a little bit setting this up, Renee, from my perspective. And one of the reasons I wanted to do it is because I am unabashedly delighted that the Vatican allowed some of its stuff to be used there. I'm absolutely delighted that my boss, Cardinal Dolan, participated in. I am annoyed at him that he didn't invite me to go with him, but I'm very happy that he chose to do it and to be part of it. And I also recognize that there's been a little bit of blowback, that some people said, oh, how could the Catholic Church be involved in that? Look at what's going on there. But I'm going to share my bias, and you get to share yours. The mine is, hey, you know, Jesus hung out with the people who weren't always in the synagogue. He hung out with people where they weren't always strict followers of the religion, because that's what he came to do, to interact with people, to bring the good news. And so my feeling is, hey, if we're invited, let's go and let's try to be a presence of what we bring to the world. And sometimes it gets a little hairy. Sometimes it doesn't always work out the right way. And some things go on in these events that are maybe not always the best. But, hey, if we're not there, how are we going to bring Jesus to a world if we only hang out with what we might think are the good guys? So, anyway, that's my perspective, Renee. So I just wanted to set that up. Let's get into this. If you want to share your perspective now, or you want to get into the gowns right away, whatever you want to do.
Sure. Well, I would say, like, thank goodness we went and represented ourselves, because, I mean, if you have somebody, you know, displaying our artwork and displaying our church history, I believe it's fitting for us to go there and be present and educate even further whoever is interested, you know, in the real truth about it. And Catholic art just is objectively beautiful as it is, and it appeals to the human eye, you know, and the whole church does this. This is how I know it's God's church in my heart. It appeals to all the senses, you know, the sense of smell with the incense and the beauty and the artwork for your eyes, and then the sense of touch, you know, with baptism and the sign of the cross, and then the reception of the Eucharist, the taste, you know, it's crazy how it appeals to humanity because God knows his creation so well. So I'm not surprised that eventually somebody was like, hey, you know, we should get Catholic art in here. It's gorgeous. But I'm just really glad that we stepped in and said, hey, yeah, that's our stuff. Here we are.
Well, you know, Renee, I was lucky enough. I've been to Canterbury Cathedral I've been to Shot. I've been to Canterbury too, but I'm going to talk about Shot. And there's a gentleman there who fortunately does a tour there in English, which I went on. And what he calls the tour is reading the windows. He doesn't say looking at the stained glass, but he says reading the windows. And he tells the biblical stories, the stories of creation, salvation history, by just reading those windows. And you know, as we kind of know historically, there was a long time in Europe and everywhere where there wasn't a lot of literacy, that a lot of people couldn't read. So the windows were the artistic way that we communicated the gospel. And so, you know, I think you pointing out that our tradition, our history is so rich, and boy, I'm glad we were invited to share it. So anyway, favorite dress.
Favorite dress. Wow. I remember really liking Ariana Grande's, and also I believe it was Diana Ross's daughter wore rose and explained, gave a nice explanation of why, you know, that color is important at what time in the church. So that was awesome.
I think that was great. And in fact, Ariana Grande's had the Sistine Chapel there. Do we got a little, clip from the Sistine Chapel choir? Let's listen to the Sistine Choir Chapel, since, Renee, you brought up Ariana Grande's and the Sistine Chapel. Renee, I got to tell you, that was a beautiful piece from the Sistine. from the Sistine Chapel. But I got to tell you, I liked Ariana Grande's better than that piece. I thought it was a great.
Oh, really?
I thought it was, you know, beautiful art, beautiful stuff. I thought it was there. Hey, Fanny, what was your favorite dress?
I have like a top three, but I guess the top would be Gigi Hadid. With the stained glass window, I thought it was a perfect union between a dress, like a regular dress, a beautiful regular dress, and the Catholic Church. It wasn't like in your face type of thing, but it was still very beautiful, very classy. I loved it.
Loved it?
Okay. Yeah.
All right. So now let's go to the other side. Was there, Renee? Was there any of the dresses that you didn't like for a variety of reasons, for whatever reason, that you really didn't like?
Well, it wasn't so much the artistic designs of the dress, really, as much as what they conveyed to about the person wearing them. Because some people who showed up to the event, just like the one she just mentioned, Gigi Hadid, her dress, you know, it was showing off the beauty of the dress as a piece of artwork, as representing the art of the stained glass window, and that was really great. But then there were some other dresses that really were more about self-promotion than displaying the art or saying something about the artist or celebrity first and foremost, whether that was like a power symbol or power dress for them or something like that.
Well, you know what it was with some of them, and I agree with you, Renee, some of them didn't play the game. In other words, it's like going to a masquerade party and saying, I'm above it all and I'm not going to get into the theme. Some of them had on gorgeous dresses, and I'll just mention one because I like her a whole lot, and her dress was very elegant and stylish, Brooke Shields, but it didn't play the game. I mean, it had nothing to do with the theme. And then there were a few others that didn't play the theme, and they were promoting a lot different stuff than church art, let me tell you, in those things. So I tend to agree with you that there were some that didn't, you know, they like I said, they didn't play the game. By the way, we're speaking with the founder of the New Catholic Generation, Inc., a YouTube channel, Renee Schumay, who we're going to get out of Ohio one day because she grew up in Cleveland and went to Steubenville. And so we're going to get her out of Ohio for a while. So any other dress you didn't like or did like for whatever reason?
Cardi B's was very, very bedazzled, and maybe it just came off as really like self-promoting after all her new career moves and stuff. Like, it was meant to be a big night for her image.
Right.
And so it wasn't anything to do with church history as much as it was just using as many jewels as possible to.
And she brought a baby with her, right? because she's pregnant,
yes.
right?
She's pregnant. I did think that for her. I chuckled a little bit. I was like, okay, Virgin Mary, there you are.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure that was I don't think that was the
no.
effect she was looking for. I mean, So what do you think? The one which I thought was intriguing was the one that kind of looked like a confessional.
Yes. Oh, my. I'm sure you heard my comments on that one.
Well, tell our listeners here. Maybe they didn't look at it. Your comments on that one was?
Oh, well, I mean, I was just completely joking, but it was very, very, very sheer. That's what
right.
And it was very just like plain up, straight up lace. And of course, it was like the confessional screen or whatever.
Right.
But I believe in the video, I said, "Forgive me, Father, I forgot pants." Like
you did, but so, but so, okay. So here's Renee. Here's what I love about kind of symbols and imagination and stuff like that. You're absolutely right that there was more going on through the screen than there was in front of the screen in that outfit. But. If you took a moment, and I'm not saying that the person who wore it had this thought, but isn't there a sense that when we do go to confession, we're a little bit naked before God?
Oh, and, absolutely. Just like back in the garden.
Yeah. And like, you know, that like, I'm not saying that she had any sense of that or the designer, but that's what's so wonderful about the Catholic imagination. You can take things that are rich in our history and you can treat them in one way, but if you take a step back and allow God to help you look in a different way, you might be able to see something that maybe even the author didn't intend to see. And I have to say, that's what I loved about the Met Gala, because I thought it was really, it permitted you to kind of, you know, look at a few things and you say, ah, that one's yucky. I mean, for example, I'll tell you the one that I thought is depressed to me was Madonna. I mean, you know, it's a bright day. We don't need all that black, for God, you know, but there was a lot of black in it. So, I mean, it was like, that was, but that's what I like about, you know, our Catholic imagination, that there's a richness to it, that if we let it speak to us, it maybe can take us to places that we wouldn't have gone without it and without God's grace.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So any other dress that you liked as part of the gala?
I believe there was one that looked kind of like Our Lady of Sorrows. I felt it was a very respectful way to display it, still with a modern, stylish vibe, I guess. I can't remember who wore it.
Hey, Fanny, who was that?
That was Lana Del Rey.
And did she come with a date?
She did. She went with Jared Leto.
Okay, what Jared Leto had on?
He had on like a blue coat and like the confessional
stole.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, and she had, wasn't it, the one she had was had the seven swords coming out of it,
yes.
Didn't it?
Yep.
And
she had a halo with like blue wings on her head.
I liked Katy Perry's angel wings. I mean,
I don't know how she sat down.
And
but
so, you know, I did hear though she actually knocked somebody over with them at one point.
No.
So,
I believe that.
Yeah, she did.
When she arrived at the Met Gala, she arrived like on a bus without a roof because she couldn't sit down. So she was standing the whole time.
That is good. And I'll tell you the outfit that I thought had a real medieval flavor to it, clearly with the cross dominating, was J-Lo's. It had this wonderful regal looking and rich looking cross that really conveyed a whole lot of things. So Renee, before I let you go, and I appreciate it, tell me a little bit about what is it you're trying to kind of accomplish and do with the New Catholic Generation YouTube channel. What are you trying to get across, communicate? What are you trying to do?
Well, first and foremost, we just want to be representatives of a demographic that exists out there. And I know there are so many wonderful videos that speak to the youth or have interviews with young people. But this one, we're so casual about it, and we're just being ourselves, but really trying, you know, to pursue the faith and trying to show that through the screen. And it keeps us on track, knowing that we're being viewed by people who are looking for help in their own faith lives and stuff. That keeps us on track. And then we are so rewarded by just all the prayers and all the feedback that we get from these people. But I guess the main thing we're doing is just trying to be genuine and real and reach out to people and tell them, you know, they are loved by God. And coming out of more of these younger people, it makes the other young people in the world feel less alone or less by themselves, you know, in a group of secular friends that are out doing all the things the church doesn't condone. So, yeah, I guess we're just really trying to show our genuine selves and encourage other young people in the faith and just be their friend as much as possible through the internet screen.
So now, yeah. Fanny, you're involved with a youth group in New York City in the Bronx. What is that youth group, you know, try to accomplish and achieve?
I think the same as Renee, but without the internet. So we hold retreats at least once a month for youth who don't know God at all or want to know but don't know how to start. The retreats range from either 14 to 18 years old or young adult, which is 18 to 35. So, I mean, it's the same exact thing. I think that when I first started to kind of learn about Catholicism and things like that, I didn't know that there were other young people out there who believed in God. And I think that it's refreshing and kind of very encouraging to see that, you know, there are a lot of young people who want to learn about God and who are walking in this world and, you know, struggle, but still want to do better.
So, Renee, before I let you go, I got a question for you, which I need your help on. So remember, I'm from the old and decrepit generation, and I want to know, what should we be doing to make the next generation feel more welcome and part of our communities, our church? What should we be doing to kind of create that warm, open, you know, atmosphere?
Well, faith is an incredibly personal thing, and the way to conversion is through the heart. So even in these younger people, they all have their own stories and their own struggles, and I've seen the benefits of seeing other young people get YouTube channels and letting them speak and talk and have some sort of a platform. And it's very nerve-wracking, perhaps person to person, face to face, but and through the internet. But if there's any type of way to allow, like, your local youth group or whatever to write down their stories or to express themselves more and show them that understanding and that sympathy or that love when you do hear their story, that's the compassion of Christ right there. And that's what's going to draw people in and make them feel heard, listened to, and loved. And like the church is an actual home that it is. So
Renee, what we hear when you read some articles and you hear things is that the next generation, they've got a little bit of skepticism of everything institutional, whether it be politics, whether it be church, whether it be that. And while there might be a spirituality there, it's a little bit more, not self-centered, but it's not connected to an institution or broader. Are the articles I'm reading on target or not on target from your perspective?
That is very true, for sure. And I believe kind of sad, but there are going to be a lot of people in life who are going to pursue the wrong things and either learn it the hard way, you know, that there's no happiness in those things, and come to find God through their tough experience. Or, you know, we have to pray for the ones who will just get stuck in the rut and not know where to turn and not know what to do, and when they find out that's not true happiness. So sometimes we just have to pray while these young people go through a crazy time when life is pulling them in all sorts of directions. But we have to be there for them when they finally turn around or wake up and see that those things aren't the answer.
Hey, Renee, I just want to thank you for taking the time to be with us on Just Love and sharing your insights. You want to tell our listeners how they can find the New Generation Inc., the YouTube channel? Tell them how they can find it.
Yeah, New Catholic Generation on YouTube, pretty much, or even any of our names. So Renee Shume can lead you to New Catholic Generation as well, since I'm in the videos. So
great. So listen, thank you so much, and I hope sometime in the future you'll come back and you'll talk with us again on Just Love.
Hey, and maybe in person. Maybe I'll get over there to New York someday.
Here's a promise. If you come to New York, we'll make sure you come into the studio.
That'd be wonderful. I'd love to visit. Thank you so much, Martin.
Thank you. Renee Shume, founder of the New Catholic Generation. Check it out on YouTube. We're going to take a break now. Just do it, Bo. Love God, love your neighbor, love yourself, and our world will be more just and more compassionate. If you want to check out my blog, you can do so at justloveblog.com or follow me at Twitter at MSGRKSullivan. And we'll be back in just a moment on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
Now, let's get back to Just Love and your host, Monsignor Kevin Sullivan.
Welcome back to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. Just do it. Just love God. Just love your neighbor. Just love yourself. And our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. So this is the Memorial Day weekend. And when we do it, we think prayerfully about those who served in the armed services. And in a little bit, we're going to be speaking with George Horton, who is a friend, used to be on us with co-host here every week on Just Love. And it's 50th anniversary of the war in Vietnam. And we're going to reflect a little bit with George on some of his experience then. And we'll talk a little bit about the just war and just peace and how we do that. But, you know, interestingly, there's a lot about career in the news these days. And I was a little confused. But, Fanny, so the Korean War isn't over?
Technically, it's not, which actually I was as surprised as you are. Yeah. So apparently the Korean War in itself was from 1950 to 1953.
And as George will tell us that it took three of the best years out of Ted Williams's baseball.
right,
George?
Oh, absolutely right.
Yeah. And
absolutely.
Still, I'm saying this as a Yankee fan. Might be the best hitter of all time.
Wow, that's quite a concession.
Yeah, it
is. That's quite a concession. And I might say DiMaggio was a better player, all-around player.
But not a better person.
Oh, okay.
DiMaggio was not a team player. It was all about Jolt and Joe. You know, the later guys, Yogi, Mickey, and those, they were more team players. Huh? They were, but Jolton Joe was a little bit about himself. But
where have you gone, Joe DiMaggio?
You're right, right. Okay, so Fannie, we sorry. So Korean War.
So they, in 1953, it didn't technically end. What happened was that they, instead of signing a permanent peace treaty, they signed a ceasefire. Okay. So all of this time, it's just been a ceasefire. And it hasn't been any, you know, any type of crazy violent war. But that doesn't mean it was technically over. The year after, they were supposed to sit down and sign at a conference. They were having a meeting. And even then, they couldn't agree on the terms. So they're still technically at war. They, the both leaders from North Korea and South Korea currently met, but still nothing has come of it.
Right. And again, as you say, it's one of those situations where, you know, thank God that they're not shooting each other.
Right.
They're not killing people. But there still is the tension. There still is the lack of communication in so many ways. And, you know, so it's, again, I think that's an interesting thing for us to think about. So now we talk about families, right?
Yes.
And how important families are and families staying together and things like this. So tell me, what's this about a family trying to get rid of their kids?
Well, he's not a kid.
So tell me this story. Tell us what's going on.
So two parents, parents in Syracuse, New York, they're suing their 30-year-old son because he won't leave the house. So they gave him $1,100 for rent. They gave him, I believe, 5 written notices that he needed to leave. He denied that he received those notices. So now they're in court because...
Isn't there a thing called change the locks?
I guess not. I don't know. I don't know. But he's 30 years old. He doesn't have a job. He's saying that he's not eating their food. He does his own laundry. So he's not a bother, but he won't leave. So they're upset that he won't leave.
I don't know about this. George, what do you think?
Well, I like the lock idea. That seems to me to be the best solution here.
And so here's the idea. I mean, if the guy only stays in his room,
right.
Okay? I mean, maybe he goes outside. Sometimes you change the lock.
Right.
If he only stays in the room, then you lock the door from the outside.
Right.
I mean, you know, so they're suing.
They're suing him to leave the house. I think it's going to happen.
Maybe the parents should move out.
Maybe, but then he can't afford the mortgage because he doesn't have a job. Regardless, he's out of a home.
I don't know. Okay. What else you got? We got anything else in the news, Fanny?
Yeah, one interesting thing. Well, I guess it's a pretty good week for women. So Democrats in Georgia nominated Stacey Abrams as their candidate for governor, and that's making her the first Black woman to be a major party nominee for governor. And if elected, Abrams would continue to break barriers by becoming the first Black governor in the United States. I thought that was pretty cool.
The first Black female governor.
Right. First Black female governor in the United States.
Right.
Then Adina Friedman became CEO of NASDAQ last year. What's interesting about that is that 31 years ago, there wasn't even a woman's restroom at the New York Stock Exchange. So I think this, you know, we're making strides as women in the United States. Pretty cool.
Well, and they also named this past week Stacey Cunningham as the president of the New York Stock Exchange again, which I maybe not quite the first there, but so there is a I think that's good. A lot of stuff is opening up, but I can tell you, you know, as we see all these things, it's wonderful. But you know, our listeners know I'm in New York, and we do a fair amount of stuff with financial services. There is still an incredibly high domination of white men in the senior positions and even other positions in the financial services. But there's change, and it's good. Let's take a break. And then when we come back, we're going to speak with George Horton. Just check out my blog, justloveblog.com. Follow me on Twitter, MS GRK Sullivan. And you learn more about the topics that we talk about on Just Love. Just do it. Love God, love your neighbor, love yourself, and our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. Join us when we come back on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
Just do it. Just love. Just check out Monsignor Kevin Sullivan, who's here right now. Take it away, Monsignor.
That's me. Thanks for being with us on Just Love this Memorial Day weekend. We're going to speak a little bit about a topic that is, you know, sad. It's we've lost a lot of people in war over the years, and not only the United States, but throughout the world. And it's a little bit of a challenge that we have as Catholics, because while we want to be patriotic and supportive of our own country, we also recognize that people from other nations who die in war, they're made in God's image and likeness, too. So it's a little bit of a challenge for us as Catholics, you know, when we want to be loyal to our own country, but we can't do it at the expense of hating other countries. And so I'm delighted that George Horton is with us today, who used to be co-host of Just Love, who is the director of the Department of Social and Community Development of Catholic Charities, and who is really somebody who knows a lot about this topic. And I wanted to have George on us today because he lived through what, for me, was a very, very significant era in American history, which somebody like Fanny doesn't even remember because it's like ancient history to her. But it's you know, 50 years ago that we were going through a lot of the crisis, angst, divisions regarding the war in Vietnam. George, hey, thanks so much for being with us on this Memorial Day weekend.
It's good to be with you.
Hey, George, so set for our listeners your own kind of personal history around where you were, being drafted, not being drafted, entering the war. So give us a little bit of a, give our listeners a sense of where you fit into the whole thing.
Well, actually, I hadn't thought too much about Vietnam as I was graduating from Holy Cross in 1967. A lot of my classmates had got into the National Guard. But I remember graduation, looking at all the ROTC graduates, Navy, Air Force, and thinking, you know, George, you need to defend your country, too. You need to fight for your country. And shortly after that, I found out I didn't think I was going to be drafted because I'm legally blind in my right eye, but I found out that I was going to be drafted. So I went to Washington, actually, to talk to my congressman, Silvio Conti, to see if he could get me into the Marines as an officer. And again, I wasn't able to get in the Marines because of the eye, but they said you could go to OCS, Officer Candidate School, in the Army. And that's what happened. A couple months later, I began my training at Fort Dix and then went to Fort Benning, Georgia, for my training to be an officer in Officer Candidate School. And it was there that I had an experience in my life which has stayed with me. Fort Benning and the training that I went through was the exact training that William Calley of My Lai went through 2 years before I did. And again, I was enthused. I wanted to fight for my country. And I remember one day, and this day it's as if it's happening again to me. We were sitting in stands, calling in airstrikes of napalm on these stick figures which were out in front of us. And while the jets were coming in and dropping the napalm, the first idea that was floated was these stick figures are gooks. They're not human beings. They're not Vietnamese. They're gooks. So the napalm, the demonization of people, and before I knew it, everyone in the stands were standing up yelling, kill, kill, kill. Now, at that moment, I looked around and I thought, you know, I don't really feel real comfortable here. But I also felt that napalm on my own skin. It was a visceral reaction. I don't know where it came from, but something inside me shifted. And that shift has accompanied me all my life. I'm very grateful you asked me to come on today, because when I tell that story, I always feel a little bit ashamed in a way, because so many of my countrymen went to Vietnam, fought in the war, went through much more than my napalm experience. But on reflecting on it today, I thought I might never have had that experience in Vietnam. Because if I went to Vietnam, which I realized, I would have had to have such a mindset that I could not let those events touch me. So it actually, I look back on it now and I say something was happening that was, I see good for me at that point. The shift inside me, I couldn't show that to the rest of the officer candidates. So I had to hide it because you couldn't tell them you were a little ambivalent about fighting. I had orders for Vietnam. I was on my way. I knew, A, if I went to Vietnam, I would have to shift my mindset so that there was no ambiguity. And I've always had great sympathy for soldiers who've had to fight. But I'm also aware of what has to happen in your head. Dorothy Day asked the question, what do we do to people when we train them to kill? But I knew if I went and I was going, I had to think that way. The second, which I kind of give myself credit for, I knew I had to find a really good sergeant who'd be able to tell me how to get through over there. You had to have the mindset because I would have been a first lieutenant commanding a platoon of people, and you couldn't gainsay it. But at that moment, something shifted in me. And, you know, if we think about why did that happen? I mean, and what shifted was this. The doubt has carried over to where, and it's part of the 60s in some way, a little distrust of authority. But more importantly, if we take that event and we think about what we're taught, as a Catholic young man growing up, there was an identity between being Catholic and being American. I mean, you felt that both of those went together. And if you wanted to get ahead, you treated both of those as equal. Today, I've moved to the point where I want my faith to drive my politics, faith to drive how I look at war, my faith to drive what happens to young people when they're suffering. So that moment shifted me, and I'm grateful for that.
George, thank you so much for sharing with our listeners that story. Now, you said you had your orders to go to Vietnam. Did you actually...
Well, again, I think Providence must have been playing a role, because when I went for my final physical, before I would have shipped out to, I believe, Fort Hood and then to Vietnam, the doctor looked at me, and now, because I was blind in my right eye, he said, "You can't go to Vietnam." And where I was at the moment, those were the most welcome words I could have heard. And he wrote on my transcript and on my medical record, and the ironies continue to this day, unqualified for combat. And I think about that often. And at that moment, I was unqualified for combat. He said, "Where would you like to go?" And I said, "Germany," before he took his next breath. I wish I'd said Italy, but I said Germany. So I was...
Did you go to Germany?
I did. I spent two years in Germany. What I also realized about myself and my own Catholic being at the time was that I didn't have very much consciousness about conscientious objection, about how Catholics should be thinking about the war. I didn't know about Dorothy Day at the time. I wasn't aware. This is also, Kevin, the 50th anniversary of the Catonsville Nine,
right,
which was an action led by the Berrigan brothers to burn draft records in Catonsville, Maryland. I had no idea that this kind of resistance was going on, so that I didn't have a consciousness that would have said, "Well, I'm going to Canada," or "I'm going to apply for conscientious objection." Some of the soldiers I was with did do that. But in a way, I was kind of secure in Germany, and I knew I would be there, so I wasn't faced with that choice.
Well, you were actually drafted.
No, I enlisted for OCS.
Okay.
But I was going to be drafted.
Right.
I was going to be drafted.
Okay. So, George, thank you so much for sharing that story. And, you know, I'm just a couple of years younger than you, but I remember that era very well. And what you describe was, again, one of the awful divisivenesses that was part of the United States in that day. You know, people say, is today bad? And I think today's worse than then. But then was pretty bad in a way. And what you talk about, and as we're this Memorial Day weekend, I think it's worth reflecting on. And I think, you know, the people who do go to fight, you know, we need to keep them always in our prayers. And when we come back, we need to be supportive of that. But what George said is something that was in the atmosphere. I can tell you, because I heard it, I saw it. It was not very kindly towards those who went to fight by those who were thought the war itself was unjust.
Yeah.
And it was kind of basically saying that, well, you're fighting, you as a soldier are fighting an unjust war, and therefore you're being unjust. And it was a very, very difficult thing to deal with. And you know, now some 50 years later, we can do it. And as I said, I did not, when it came my turn, even though I was in the seminary then, we participated in the lottery, and my birth date came out 365.
Oh.
So, I mean, and it was like, you know, and there were people around me whose birthday came out one. Mm. And probably at that point, if your birthday came out in the top third, you were probably going to be called and depending. So, but I can remember it being a very, very divisive thing. And I can tell you personally, never having gone, but dealing with the anger, the divisiveness, because while those who were against the war may look down on those who went and as being immoral, unjust fighters at whatever. Those who protested were looked down by a lot of other people as being communists, as being unpatriotic, being cowards. So it kind of, and all this was before Twitter and social media, but it was a very, very, you know, awful, awful situation. I know myself, I only kind of got a little bit over the healing of the situation when I went to see the Vietnamese memorial in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
And that was a very healing moment for me, having lived through the divisiveness of that time. I've said this before. I mean, you know, it was a very ambiguous time. I, within a year of each other, changed my position. One year I walked in favor of the war. Another year I walked against the war down Fifth Avenue in New York. Over, you know, it was a very, very difficult situation. So George, thank you for that. And I do think it's hard to separate out certain things. I think we've gotten better now in terms of appreciating how we should treat veterans coming back. I have to tell you, though, that I personally think there should be a draft. And I think there should be a draft which does permit service, which is non-military service. But, you know, for everybody, no exemptions. Nobody, whether you're in the seminary, whether you're rich, whether you're poor, white, black, whatever, to ask everybody to do a year of service either after high school or college, I think that might create a little bit more sense of solidarity for us as a nation. We could use a lot of that. So anyway, but that's just my opinion on that thing. But George, let's just talk for a minute. How do we use, as you said, wanting to think about our country through the prism of our Catholic values, what do we have to contribute today to kind of helping us to develop policies and things which avoid war and do not prematurely say the solution is to nuke everybody?
Yeah. One of the factors today, which I think is so different, when I saw my classmates in their ROTC uniforms and I was at Fort Benning, even though I didn't experience what people felt when they went to Vietnam, the war was real. Today, everything seems remote control. It's a long-distance war, so that we don't come to terms with it in the way that we should and the way that we should be thinking about it. Talking to you today, I thought we'd talk a little bit about just war, just peace, the evolution of some of the church's thinking on these things. But, you know, Kevin, I'd begin with all of us have to work for peace. That as Catholics, as Christians, we have a responsibility. Blessed are the peacemakers. They will be children of God. One of the moments when we talk about just war, I remember having a conversation with a Catholic worker one day, and I raised the issue, well, what would you do with Hitler? What would you do with what he was doing in the genocide? And he said to me, George, at that moment, the train has already left the station. And that stuck with me. And I think about what took place in World War II. Did people work for peace during Weimar? The lead up to Vietnam, I mean, was 20 years. What were we doing in this country to build peace? One of the most gratifying things to me, Kevin, is the development of peace institutes throughout the country. I mean, a young person today can study peace and study how to mediate. And we need to be doing that constantly. I remember, you know, I was in the Sudan during the Civil War and meeting with women from different tribes in the Sudan who came together and were leading ways of reconciliation and peace. So that's the groundwork that every day we have to be thinking about. How can I meet peace today? And, you know, I think early in the program, you talked about we are sisters and brothers with people all over the world. There are sisters and brothers. We can't just exclude vast numbers of people for whatever reason. We can't let fear drive us to become very insulated and to think we're the only ones. So our church and Jesus call us to look for the sacred in every human being. And that's a starting point for our work for peace.
George, thank you so much for sharing your incredibly moving and personal story with our listeners. And you know, we may not be in the negotiating room. Almost none of us are going to be in the decision-making as to whether we go to war. But day in and day out, we can do our part to make our neighborhoods, our families, our communities more peaceful, and to raise a voice to saying that we need to look at these issues. And yes, inevitably, the other questions come to bear, but we can't postpone what we can do day in and day out simply because someday a decision may have to be made about whether we do go to war or not. So, George, thank you so much for sharing your story with us. Fanny, you got any great plans for the rest of this Memorial Day weekend?
The only thing that I have is on Monday, it's my friend Cynthia's birthday. So we're going up to Connecticut. She's having a barbecue. But okay. That's it so far.
What are you going to have at the barbecue?
Whatever she cooks. I don't know. Okay. I don't know what she's cooking.
All right. Well, listen, thanks for being with us on Just Love, and a blessed Memorial Day weekend. Say a prayer for those who not only fight in war, but are the victims of war, the civilians, and all of us. And let's say a prayer that we have a more peaceful world. Thanks for being with us. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. This is Just Love, the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
Listening to the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.